And now on 1170 SEN Breakfast, Vossie's verdict.
Yes, my verdict this morning. I feel I have been here before, but now speculation, hypotheticals, possibles, they have become stark reality at the Parramatta Eels. It is three-star players now gone and counting. And you can add Blake Ferguson, who's moved on as well from their squad this year. Junior Paulo could be next to go. There are reported to be some overseas rugby interest in Mike Acevo. What a state of play for a club that is cashed up. They are certainly not paupers. Consistent finalist. You've got to remember, almost beat Penrith week two of the finals this season. History could have been rewritten. Yet stability at the club ripped apart more than 3 months before the 2022 season gets underway. What a challenge for Brad Arthur and his coaching team to keep this side united. The headlines are already written. If this team falters early next year, you know them. Commitment will be questioned. It is pressure long before a tackle is made or a ball kicked. But the people I feel sorriest for in all of this has to be the fans. You're told to pick and stick. At the Eels, you haven't won a premiership since 1986. Let me spell that out in a different way. Any Parramatta fan under the age of 35 wasn't on this earth when they last experienced premiership glory. Hard today to keep the head up and be positive. How could all this happen to a seemingly strong club? And this system we have in the NRL where you can negotiate with players 12 months in advance of them coming off contract is killing Parramatta. I make the point again, and we predicted this. The Eels could run out for round one next year with four of their starting forward pack already signed with rival clubs for 2023. That is ridiculous. How is that good for the game? But I will make the stronger point. How is that good for the fan? You buy your ticket, you buy the jersey, support the club till you die, but stay a mushroom.
Vossie's verdict.
Well, on Breakfast with Vossie, 1170 SEN, this is, well, how do I put it? It's a privilege and an honour, but it's an interview to be done with great appreciation that we go into the family time of the Burrow family. We've been telling you about the plight. You're all aware of the situation with Rob Burrow and the inspiration and the spirit that we're all drawing from this story since we first learned of it early in 2020. Lindsay Burrow, the wife of Rob, has been good enough to spare us some time now, mother of three, going through, well, we can't imagine what it's like to go through, but she's on the line right now in the north of England. Lindsay, welcome to the program, and we really do appreciate your time.
Oh, no, thank you very much for having me. It's a privilege to be on the show. Thank you.
Lindsay, first of all, how are you and how is Rob?
Yeah, really good, thank you. Rob's in good spirits. He's always got a smile on his face. And, you know, the kids keep us busy. There's never a dull moment in the Burrow house. We're always kept on our toes with the kids. And, you know, obviously on the back of the fundraising that Kevin Sinfield's just done, there's a real sort of heartwarming feel in the Burrow house at the minute.
The fact that you're doing an interview right now to someone on the other side of the world is part of how your life has been upturned. Can I ask from that aspect how you handle the attention?
Yeah, you know, it's completely out of my comfort zone. You know, both myself and Rob, we don't particularly like the limelight. And I think going back to when Rob was first diagnosed, if he'd have said to me, you know, Rob would have a documentary, Rob would have written a book, I would have, you know, probably just said, oh, you're having me on. I probably wouldn't have believed you. But I think what Rob wanted to do was use his platform to raise awareness for people that didn't have a voice. Ironically, obviously, Rob's lost his voice now. But yeah, as the world has been turned upside down, and I think for me, you know, it's quite often out of my comfort zone doing interviews and things. But, you know, I just think to myself at the end of the day, seeing what Rob's going through and other sufferers as well with MND, you know, me doing an interview is nothing really in comparison. And if it helps raise awareness of this cruel disease, then I'm more than happy to, you know, to kind of break the comfort zone and do what I can to help raise awareness.
Can I ask you a little further then on that point? Can you appreciate just how bigger impact you are having on people's lives? I mean, on this side of the world, I mean, to have a legend like Brad Fittler on the program just a couple of days ago, and he relays a story where the kids went out running onto the field saying, let's do it for Rob. I mean, they're inspired by his spirit. That must almost be overwhelming.
It is. It's quite surreal as well, because both myself and Rob were just from working class families, working class backgrounds. So to suddenly have all this attention, it is quite surreal and overwhelming at times. And, you know, I think for me, I always think, oh, you know, am I saying the right thing? Or, you know, how do we come across? But I think, you know, we just wear our heart on the sleeve, and it's, you know, we really, you know, have done this to try and help other people that, you know, are perhaps not as fortunate as us in many ways. You know, we've done this for the postman, or, you know, the bricklayer, or, you know, somebody that doesn't have that support. And, you know, the rugby league community, I have to say, have just been absolutely phenomenal. The support that we've had, you know, I think that's the reason why we have a smile on his face, and why we are so positive, and because they just give us so much, you know, to live for, and so much to be hopeful for.
I was wary about how invasive I could be in this interview in preparing for it, Lindsay, but I must say, I love reading real life stories, and Too Many Reasons to Live, Rob's autobiography. The first chapter absolutely stops you in your tracks and you have tears rolling down your cheeks. I do have to ask you about a particular date, December 12, 2019.
How did you
reflect on that moment? No one should have to go through that, obviously.
Yeah, it was, you know, it has to be the worst day of my life. And I think going into that consultation with the consultant, I don't think either of us were prepared. I mean, we had read around, you know, that this might be, and I'd sort of questioned, I actually asked the question when Rob went to have some nerve conduction studies done, could this be motor neuron disease? And the consultant at the time had said, why are you asking us that? It's a really rare condition. It's very, very unlikely. So we were quite optimistic, and I don't think any of us were quite prepared really for going into that room and to be told that, you know, from that moment on, really, just, you know, our world fell apart. And I think for the first 2 weeks, it was just, you know, I remember not sleeping properly at night. I couldn't eat. I was probably in a worse state than Rob. You know, Rob sort of tackled it head on and said, right, that's it. You know, I accept the sort of the diagnosis. And I think some of that might be that Rob didn't have the, I think as a physiotherapist, I'd seen patients firsthand with motor neuron disease, you know, quite late on in the disease process. And so I think I knew what we were in for, whereas Rob was just a tower of strength. You know, he was the one that said, you know, Lindsay, pull yourself together. We need to be strong. And I think it was Rob's mentality and his positivity that, you know, sort of got us through those first couple of weeks. And obviously telling the kids was a really tough time. And I wouldn't wish it on, you know, on anybody to be told that news. And it is just such a cruel, devastating disease.
Yeah, there's a line in that, and in the first chapter, when the diagnosis is actually handed down, and Rob admits to a lot of it being a blur once you get the actual line that you have motor neuron disease. But the line that just made me cry straight away was, thank God it's not you or the kids. That's your husband. That's the father.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that is just Rob for you, you know, that was genuinely hand on heart. That was the first thing that he said. Rob wasn't bothered about himself. It, you know, he was, thank goodness it's me and it's not you or the kids. And you know, he was more worried about me and actually telling his dad at the time, Jeff Burrow, Rob's dad, had some heart problems. He'd had, you know, a mild heart attack. And Rob, you know, his concern was, how am I going to tell my dad? This will kill my dad. And I think, you know, in hindsight now, looking back, it's given Jeff a purpose, and it's given, you know, Jeff's very much, you know, been very actively involved in all the campaigning and things that's been going on recently, and it's almost kind of given Jeff a purpose. But Rob was really worried about, you know, telling his parents, and obviously they knew we'd gone for the investigations. And I think, you know, Rob wasn't thinking about himself. There was never any self-pity. There was never, why me? Why has this happened? He was very much, you know, thinking about other people and how that was, you know, the news was going to affect them.
Lindsay Burrow, my special guest. I draw on you now as a parent. And as I say, the whole story has been so moving and now inspiring so many. But advice to other parents, to people to handle this, how to handle this with their kids. At the time of the diagnosis, what, Macy was 8, Maya's 4, little Jackson's 1. How do you get through that? How do you explain this to children?
It's really difficult, isn't it? And it's a situation that, you know, we'd never been in, never had experienced anything like it before. And I was asking advice from, you know, the clinical nurse specialist saying, how do I, you know, approach this? I was asking the school, can somebody, you know, because we couldn't tell the kids straight away. We had to, you know, sort of process that information first. And the difficulty thing was we didn't have the answers. And I knew we were going to be faced with questions from the children, you know, maybe not at that initial point, but I knew there would be questions later on. And you know, the doctors and medical people didn't have the information. And I think that was, you know, that was most sort of the frustrating part, was that we didn't have the answers. So I don't think I was prepared initially. And we just sort of took the approach from speaking to, you know, the healthcare professionals, that, you know, be honest with them, tell them as much as they need to know. And actually, when we came round to telling the children, it was just before Christmas, had just broken up from school. And it was at the time our youngest daughter, Maya, had said, you know, what are you telling us that for? That's boring. And I'll always remember those words. And it just made light heart of the situation. And it was quite, yeah, you know, it made Rob laugh. And it just sort of broke the ice, you know, at that point in time. And then it was afterwards, the eldest daughter, Maisie, did start asking questions about, you know, dying and asking questions about Rob. And but at the time, it sort of helped. I think it helped just Maya being so, you know, blasé about it, really, and just kind of, you know, as if like, well, what, you know, why? That's kind of boring. I'll carry on playing now. Thank you.
No, incredible. The way kids handle things like that's amazing. That you break this news, oh, that's boring. Yeah. Go on playing.
Yeah,
amazing.
Carry on playing, yeah.
That's quite incredible. There is the saying that not all superheroes wear capes. I would suggest that your husband fits that category. I would certainly suggest Kevin Sinfield. That is just absolutely mind-blowing what Kevin has done for the cause and to raise an incredible amount of money for motor neuron disease research.
Absolutely. I think he's superhuman, isn't he? And just it's just phenomenal. The amount of, you know, not just the money that's been raised, but the awareness through, you know, what Kev's done, and just seeing the support for Kev over that, you know, throughout his last challenge. It was quite different because the last challenge he did was during COVID. So it was very much sort of kept under wraps and people couldn't go out and support him. Whereas this time, he, you know, people were lying in the streets. There was brass bands. He had a, you know, a brilliant reception at Headingley and, you know, well-deserved as well. We're just, you know, incredibly proud of Kev for everything he's done. And I just think it shows the friendship between Rob and Kev. And Kev's been there from day one, from when Rob was first diagnosed. You know, he's played alongside him throughout the whole of his career, was his captain for 15 years. And I think it's just, you know, testament to Kev, what, you know, is actually, you know, for what he's done for Rob. And not just for Rob, but for the whole MND community as well.
Lindsay Burrow, my special guest. I'll just a couple more to finish. Has what you're going through, has it redefined for you what courage is, what bravery is, what love is, what real love is?
Yeah, it has. I think it puts things into perspective, you know, things that you perhaps worry about before and are really insignificant now. I think, you know, it's important that if you don't have your health, then, you know, all those other things, you know, having nice cars or, you know, the material things that don't matter anymore. And it's about, for us now, it's making those times, memories as a family, and just appreciating the small things in life, you know, just going to the park or, I don't know, going out for tea or going to the swimming baths. You know, it's those things in life that matter, and just enjoying that time as a family unit and spending that time together and, you know, making the most of what time we've got together.
Now, I don't know whether he's listening, and if we send you a copy of the interview, we might have to delete this, but have you got Rob something for Christmas then? What have the kids got Daddy for Christmas?
I haven't. I'm really late this year. I think there's been so much, I know, so much going on this year, but yeah, I am a little bit behind with my Christmas shopping this year, but yeah, I'm sure we'll come up and think of something. I might leave that to the kids and see what they come up with.
Beautiful.
I don't know whether that's a good idea or a bad idea.
I said at the time that we all learned about the diagnosis that Rob Burrow was a little man, but he's proving himself now a giant. And he has done that. And I do hope Rob appreciates and knows just what impact he's having, how inspiring he is to so many people. And it's outside the rugby league family. And as we tell this story more today, Lindsay, I've taken enough of the family time tonight. I really appreciate you coming on the program, and I wish you and Rob and Macy and Mayor and Jackson and all the family all the very best.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. It's been great. Thank you.
On Breakfast with Vossie, a sports update with Michelle Bishop.
Michelle Bishop, happy Tina Turner Day, 82 today. Are you ready to deliver this first sports update of the day for Ken O'Tyre?
Ken Oath. Simply
wow,
the best.
I love.
What else can we say?
Hairs on the back of the neck. Simply the best. That's right. You could, we could get Nutbush City Limits playing in the background. No, I think there's nothing more boring than doing that dance. But anyway, Michelle, what have you got for us today? The Parramatta story, you broke the story yesterday. If I'm a Parramatta, I have great empathy for the Parramatta fans. I think this is now, I don't know whether disgrace is the word or not, but this is just such a, the game shouldn't operate this way. You can't have that many players already signed for another club going into next season.
I'm not going to beat around the bush. With this one, Vossie. It is poor management. Other clubs are able to do it. You see the Melbourne Storm, other clubs operate like this year in, year out. We're seeing little hints of it at the Dogs right now, having to move players along when it's not going to sort of fit in terms of the salary cap. I just think it's got to have the right people in the right job. And right now, if you're Clint Gutherson, do you start to get a little bit nervous? I mean, we are bordering on this mass exodus of talent from 2023. I can see why fans are upset. Social media has gone absolutely ballistic. People that are members of the club wanting to cancel their membership, they are that outraged that it is pretty scary that what's happening for those supporters over the next few months. But Marnie, a four-year deal, $650,000, and I am told that the Eels upped their offer basically at the 11th hour, but it was too short. Like, it just wasn't even close to where they were at, and they were still only offering the 3 years. Look, surely today Junior Paulo's on this speed dial, seeing how quickly he can get into that boardroom, sign him up. They'll have to pay overs. They're in no other situation. And that's because they've allowed this situation to fester and play out for as long as it has. Now, if I'm Paulo today, I say, show me the money and, the car, whatever you can get, give Reed money in his deal. I want the lot.
He pulls up in the stretch limo in the white suit. They know they're in trouble, Parramatta. They know they are in trouble. Brisbane Bomber on the text, Michelle, exactly what you're saying. He says, as a Parramatta fan, I'm frustrated, annoyed, angry. What is their plan? The club needs to make a statement to tell the fans what their strategic plan is. Do they have one? How did so many players come off contract at once? There aren't many great hookers in the whole comp, so we are now stuffed, he says. You should see the Eels' Facebook page. It's a dumpster fire.
It actually is, Vossie.
The Brisbane
Bomber. And I was gobsmacked. And we're talking some pretty loyal fans completely turning. And look, this is one thing that the Parramatta Eels, I will say, they have a bit of a history of blaming past management throughout the years. When all different things have gone wrong, there's always been sort of issues with past management or past boards. This is squarely on them. They are fully responsible for what's unfolding here at the moment. And can I also tell you that I kind of feel I've just my sources sort of tell me that maybe Junior Paulo will stay. I'm not sure that he'll go. So that's, maybe a positive for them. But then they've got Dylan Brown. I know the Warriors are circling there. And look, let's look at the dog situation. Look, I feel like we've been down this road before. Very familiar scenes here with Phil Gould. It does feel like Penrith 2011, 2012 all over again, rolling his sleeves up, doing all the quiet work behind the scenes. They do have to offload some players. Luke Thompson, Corey Allen and Nick Kotrick are the three. They probably will look at, if one or two moving those players on. But I'm also told that I don't know the player, I'll be completely honest, but I'm also told that they're circling somebody else. So there's still some exciting times. Geez. If you're a Doggies fan right now, Viliami Kikau, Reed Marnie yesterday. He's been in the job sort of 5 minutes. The roster, Matty Burton, Josh Addo Carr, Paul Vaughan, Tevita Pangai Jr., as I say, Braden Burns, Brent Naden. It's exciting, really exciting for a club
and
that's
Chinese
struggled
restaurant.
For a long time.
Yeah, the Chinese restaurant at the Bulldogs, they've just been run off their feet. Gus, you're it again, mate. What do you want for breakfast today? It's incredible. Another view on the Parramatta, like Tim says, he agrees with our talkback caller, Jack, who came on the McDonald Jones open line. The current Eels squad is perennially the fifth or sixth best side in the comp. Being forced to shake things up may be exactly what they need. In principle, I agree with that to a degree, but you do have to get the players from somewhere. And you talk about young talent. I don't know whether it's the best young talent in the competition coming through the Parramatta ranks. So, you know, I think they've got issues. The Reptile says Eels in big trouble. Every player that has for 23 has signed for a club that did not make the top eight. What is the issue? Obviously, internal problems. That's a point.
Niokore, yeah.
Papalihi, now Marnie have all signed for teams outside the top eight. Well, they've signed for coin. They've signed for more money. That's one thing. It does talk. Mm. I like it when if it talks to money, dude. Who doesn't like money talking to you?
Very true.
Let's have a show of hands. Look, you know how much I won in Powerball last night, Michelle?
Oh, I've noticed you here, so clearly yeah. Zero.
$10.70. I took the power hit, so I was guaranteed
better
the Powerball.
Nothing.
I got two numbers, two and a Powerball. I get $10.70.
A couple of cups of coffee, better than nothing. But I'll tell you what, the special at the Chinese restaurant at Canterbury Leagues Club this week is, of course, the smoked eel. It's been going off.
Yeah. Oh.
Anyway.
Yeah, the fortune cookies. What about them? That's what I reckon that's right. If we had a show, if we were a television show right now, I'd be doing the comedy sketch. The contract comes in the form of a fortune cookie. So Reed Money,
perfect.
So here's our offer. And he gets the little cookie and he opens it up and he gets the little slip of paper and that's the amount of money. I think that'd be a great sketch. Who'd play Gus in that one? Who'd play Gus? Clooney?
Oh, yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
Listen, Bossy, I also wanted to mention this morning, because I think it's important, you know, the club hasn't sort of put it out there, you know, to sell themselves, because lots of rugby league players do this kind of stuff. But this is on the Central Coast, obviously, where I am from. But the Manly side, they volunteered to participate in a really special charity event. It was at Erina on Wednesday, and to support youth suicide prevention. So Glenn Stewart, former Manly player, reached out to Kieran Forum thinking, oh, come on, mate, can you come and help me out with this? It'll be really good. But it didn't stop there. He recruited Jake Trbojevic, Tom Trbojevic, Lachlan Croker, and Brad Parker, all in their own time. They're all on annual leave. They all made the trip up the M1 and supported the Trojan Row at the Impact Centre. And as I say, it was highlight, I guess, the tragedy that is youth suicide. They joined up with the Terrigal Trojans and the Central Coast community. It was a 24-hour rowing challenge. It started at 6 a.m. on Wednesday and finished at whatever time on Thursday, yeah. And raised a stack of money and, as I say, awareness for youth suicide prevention. Really important. All the proceeds went to Beyond Blue. Spoke with Wayne Cousins yesterday, just chasing up the whole Trbojevic yarn. It is absolutely not true. He's happy. He was part of this promotion, I guess, or charity event. And all proceeds for this. So if you feel like making a donation, of course, go to Beyond Blue.
Okay, excellent. Well done, Manly Seagulls. Just quickly, one last one, just on Glenn Boss, because we know how much you love your racing, but this is it. Tomorrow is it in the career of Glenn Boss.
Look, he's made a promise to himself many years ago and he's stuck by it. He said when he's no longer 100% invested, it's time, you know, to move on. And that's exactly what he's done. Over the last couple of months, he's sort of been, I'm not sort of all in. And, Vossi, this is so important in this sport to recognise that. It's a tough call, but an extremely selfless one, because being only half invested, being a jockey out on that track could absolutely spell disaster. It's a dangerous sport and it requires your full focus. So, you know, if you're not fully invested, as you say, it is time to hang up the saddle, the boots, whatever you want to call it. He's been awesome for the sport, 3-time winner of the Melbourne Cup on Maccabi Diva. That's a feat really unlikely ever to be achieved again. 90-time Australian Group 1 winner. That's just huge. And he'll end his career on Spanish Mission at Caulfield on Saturday. So he was sure to go out a winner. But look, you know, it just speaks of volumes of how Boss he is. No mess, no fuss. He hasn't gone out in some big, huge, massive race. He's just quietly sailing off into the sunset. I'm sure we'll see him around the track and you know, he'll continue in the sport in some capacity. But he's just been an awesome bloke and great for the sport.
Dare I say, we need to get Bossy on Breakfast with Vossy at some time soon.
Love it.
You have taken the Ken Oath. You've done very well. Ken Oath time makes your job easy. Talk to someone who's taken the Ken Oath today. If you're doing any work around the home this week, you've got to go to Ken Oath. You can't do the job without the equipment. So go down there and they will sort you out. Well done, Michelle.
Talk to you then, Vossy.
And now on Breakfast with Vossy, the back page with David Riccio. Thanks to Harley Heaven, the home of Harley Davidson in Sydney.
Yes, reaction to the Lindsay Burrow interview from the listeners after the 7:30 news. Right now, David Riccio from the Daily Telegraph. Parramatta's woes. I ask you right now about Junior Paulo, David. Stay or go? Does he stay or go?
Good morning, Vossy. Look, I'll say stay, but I've got to say it's not with abundance of confidence, given what has unfolded in the blue and gold in the last 24, 48 hours, and going further back a week or so with Murata Niokoro and Ozar Papali'i also leaving the club. Look, negotiations for Paulo's down the track, Bossy. They feel pretty confident internally, but as we've seen with Reid Marnie departing the Bulldogs, this is a deal the Eels need to get done. It has to get done for Junior Paulo and the Parramatta Eels' sake.
Might get him an extra $100,000 a season or more.
Easily.
Just the fact that it now becomes a necessity. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Back page of the Telegraph today, Shane Warne quoted extensively and pretty strong. Steve Smith should not be vice captain. What's your thoughts there?
Mm. Yeah, I love Warney's honesty here. And I must admit, I agree with his stance. Warney goes on the right that Marcus Labuschagne would be a better appointment to Pat Cummins as the vice captain, Labuschagne. But he makes the point that Steve Smith isn't befitting of a captain. So how is he befitting of a vice captain? It's an honest article. I really enjoyed the column, and it points out the fact that the inconsistency from Cricket Australia. Vossie, what's going on? Seriously, it's now been a week, coming up to a week, and we still don't know who the captain of the Australian cricket team is. It's like they're picking an under 12s team.
Yeah, background checks. Come on.
Yeah, come on. You can pick an under 12s captain quicker than what the Australian cricket team can. And I just think it's gone on way too long. As far as a PR situation, they've handled it very poorly. We should have already moved on in this situation, knowing who the captain is, and look forward to the Ashes. They have to rip the Band-Aid off and get it moving quickly.
Yeah, a train wreck is the best description of how they have handled it. David, looking forward to your pieces on the weekend in the Telegraph, the Sunday Telegraph. Thanks for your contribution this week.
Thanks, Wilson. You're well, mate.
Now, KFC Supercoach BBL is back. You can play today, supercoach.com.au. It was on the Telegraph website yesterday, and there was a headline, pick your side in 5 minutes. I went, what? What have I been doing wrong? I'm scouring over names for hours upon hours. Again, I lean on the guru, Tom Sangster, who is on the line right now. Super coach guru, good morning, sir.
Good morning, Vossie.
Is it possible? Can you pick a side in 5 minutes? Like a competitive, really good side? You can?
You can. It's a great article, that one. You can do it in 5 minutes quite easily. The comp only starts in 9 days, so it's coming around pretty quickly. We usually have a little bit of cricket beforehand, but the way that the schedules work this year with COVID, etc., it feels like it's coming around pretty fast. You can pick a team in 5 minutes. It's really easy. 25K on the line. go and get involved.
Yeah, fire up, ramp it up. Josh Philippe, I'm told he is now the most popular player.
Yeah, he's in 60% of teams, and I think you have him overthink it. He's in great form in the Sheffield Shield, second most runs in that competition. He's got a double game in round one, which means he plays twice when other teams play once. So obviously the maths tells you that he's a really good chance of scoring a lot more than other people in that first round. Don't overthink it. Just get him into your team.
Yeah, okay. Well, I've copped that tip. He's in bold print in mine. Glenn Maxwell. Should I be having Glenn Maxwell in my squad? Should our listeners have Glenn there?
He's another guy who I don't think you need to overthink either. Just get him in. He's a really simple pick. He's a great of 2020 cricket internationally and in Australia. And the key with him is he's an all-rounder. He bats and he bowls. Plus, he's probably the best fielder in the country as well. So he's getting you points in all facets of the game.
Excellent. And I tell you what about the man we had on, the boy from Barrel, Hayden Kerr? Now he's in my side because I just want to follow his progress, but he's doing it out on the field as well.
Yeah, well, you were ahead of the curve there. Long before people started picking up Hayden Kerr, you were all over him. And he's been in great form for the Shield. He got 60-odd the other day and a few wickets. In the Marsh Cup, he got 40-odd off 40 balls. He's looking really good. At the Sixers, they're missing a few players for the start of the season because of Australia and Australia A commitments. So I think he will make that team and play a pretty big part. And Kerry O'Keefe, in commentary the other day, was comparing his bowling to Mitchell Starc, which is a pretty big rap for a young kid from Barrel. So I think you got on this one early, but a lot of people are just getting around to it now, and I think he's a really good pick to start the year.
All right, he's in. Tom Sangster, thank you so much for your time. You can fire the invoice through. You are the guru. It is time to play Australia's best fantasy cricket game, KFC Supercoach BBL. You can sign up at supercoach.com.au. It is that easy. The rest of it's a bit hard, but it's that easy to sign up. Good on you, Tom.
Thanks, Wussy. Okay.
And great fun to play as well. Great fun to play. And, of course, the Big Bash. There'll be coverage here on 1170 SEN.